Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Good morning and welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and this show is brought to you by the all-new, continuously updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and now in Boston, Massachusetts as well. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call them today, 633-3700, and ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your particular home financing needs and want, and that's our guarantee to you. And also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk to effectively enter the market to find your next home with cash. So in today's market, you're going to need that because it's a very competitive market with limited inventory. And if you want to buy a home, you want to make sure that your offer is as strong as possible. And if you don't happen to have the cash and the entire amount to buy the home, a pre-purchase commitment is the equivalent because it states clearly that a bank is committed to loaning you the money. It's not a pre-approval. It's not a qualification. It's a mortgage commitment. So call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700 for personalized, customized, knock your socks off service and check out that low rate guarantee. Don't forget about the first ever 24/7, 365 real estate hotline, the Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property that's listed for sale here in Buffalo, Niagara, and all across our regions that we serve. Local number is 631-4800. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about. No matter who is listing it is, and the hotline will prompt you the choice of street name. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property. It's all automatic. And just that fast, anytime in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other brokers. You'll drive by a sign sometimes and you'll see there's one particular type of sign out there which, I mean, you need to stop and take a picture of it. It's just there's too much stuff there. Just remember 631-4800. Doesn't matter who's listing it. All you need to know is the street number and the street it's on. And the rest is automatic. It's faster than going to your phone and even Googling that address. So with the spring market wildly in place right now, it really has been fast-forwarded. There was a delay, obviously, because of the pandemic. The months of April and May were substandard in terms of sales across the entire country. In June, it's been a remarkable surge, and now we're really in the spring market, although we're halfway through the summer. So I want to encourage you to take a hard look right now. There's very few open houses these days because listings are selling that fast. So please stay on top of the market, the hotline, or simply calling 633-9400. That's our customer service center. Please call today and make sure you get your chance at the American dream here in Western New York. And remember, if you talk to one of our sales professionals, they're the only ones who can look in your eye, look you in the eye, and if you have a home to sell, they'll tell you that we will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's the seller security plan, the strongest guarantee in the market at this moment in time. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider for hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, and the Rochester Americans, and we also support the Bisons. And great news this morning that the Toronto Blue Jays will be playing baseball in Buffalo. That's going to be a very interesting change of events here in town. We had the president of the team of the Bisons on recently, only to learn that what they're doing, really having no season this year, and this is a great thing for Buffalo, so we're very happy to see that. We are live at WBEN 930 AM if you want to reach us here in the studio with any question or comment you may have. 803-0930 or 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, and star 930 for mobile. And if you want to text us, it's the same number, 803-0930. So it's all free. Call us and join us here on the air at Our House. We have a very special show for you today. We've been taking a look at the effect of the pandemic on various aspects of our world that affect your investment in real estate, which is our mission to help you to protect that investment. Here to discuss that with me this morning in the studio, we've been doing most of our shows socially distanced. Bennett, we are socially distanced, just so you know. And you can feel that we're acting safely here, is the Senior Director for News and Engagement for USA Today Network, Atlantic. It's Edward Forbes, Jr. Good morning, Ed.
Morning, Peter. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you here. Ed, what exactly does a Director for News and Engagement do?
So my title has changed more times than I can tell you over the last 10 years as an American newspaper man. My current brief is to oversee the opinion pages at our newspapers. I work for the USA Today Network. Our parent company is Gannett. And we own in the Northeast upwards of 40 daily newspapers all across New York State, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, and Delaware. And I oversee the opinion pages and the news columnists who write for those pages and for the newspapers that they're attached to.
What does engagement mean?
Engagement is a
It's a new term.
It's a relatively new term.
Widely now.
Yeah, it is. It's used widely. It's got one of these. It's one of these corporate speak terms in a lot of people's minds. But what it means in the context of what we're trying to do with the Daily Journalism Report is bring the community's voice into the work that we're doing. So one of my goals is to broaden and diversify the number of people who write opinion pieces for our publications, whether they're in Rochester or downstate in Westchester County, or whether they're in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, etc. So
it's very interesting. One of the things that seems to be true throughout the entire economy now is that whatever trend was in place prior to this pandemic descending on all of us is now accelerated. The pace at which that trend or that change took place is accelerated. One of the trends that we've talked about on the air here before with you and also with the publisher of the Buffalo News and other journalists is the kind of the massive transformation away from holding a newspaper or magazine to everything being online. Has the pandemic accelerated that trend?
So we've talked about the state of disruption in our industry, in the American journalism industry, on this show before. I know you've had, as you say, you've had many conversations with folks here in town. I would say that in my view, the disruption has been quickened. However, a lot of people see disruption as a negative term. The bright side of the pandemic is that we have seen really substantial growth in digital subscriptions, which is to say that people are now more willing to pay for what we're doing digitally, which is robust and includes a lot more than what you get with the newspaper. For instance, you know, our websites all have massive daily video reports. We're doing a ton with audio. We're doing a ton with social media. We're doing a ton of interactive journalism where we're asking readers, for instance, what they think about everything from whatever's happening in Albany or Trenton or Harrisburg, to what they think about the Blue Jays coming to town, as the case is here. So the digital experience is so much richer than what we're able to do in print. And, of course, what we do in print still we're very proud of. And there's a serendipity of using the newspaper as a news tool that you and I have talked about. But the pandemic has definitely hastened some aspects of our disruption, particularly on the ad revenue side. We are increasingly reliant on reader revenue, which is, I think, a really nice path forward for our industry, as challenged as we may be.
You and I were talking about this before, but with this explosion of kind of citizen journalism, I don't know if that's a term that's being used anywhere but out of my mouth, but everybody's a journalist now through things like Facebook and Instagram as visual with video and still shots and audio, everybody becomes a journalist. And it seems like what is happening, we've talked about this not just with people in your industry, but people in various industries, that we seem to be, rather than, I guess, pursuing some of the lofty social goals that seem to be everywhere today, we seem to be retreating into almost a tribalism that you seek to have put something out there, however outrageous or maybe even untrue it might be, to see how many people can like it or support it. And it seems that in that environment, it's harder and harder to find, and of course, this is a very difficult thing to find, but find the truth. Do you see that as, I mean, to me, it's just, there's so much confusion out there.
There is a ton of confusion, and it often, I think, my colleagues across the industry are caught in a trap where they are trying to parse through really difficult stories, and they end up using conjecture in public forums like Twitter, for instance, and, you know, stories change. So just this week, we covered a terrible story in New Jersey. A federal judge there was targeted for her involvement in some cases having to do with women's rights by a lawyer who has made a name for himself by suing whole varieties of entities that have supported feminist causes over the last 15 years. And this gentleman visited this federal judge's home, rang the doorbell, apparently shot and killed her son and critically injured her husband. The judge escaped unharmed. The shooter then apparently died by suicide in the Catskills region. But as this case was unfolding, the federal judge, reporters discovered, had just been connected to a lawsuit being brought against Deutsche Bank that has a connection to the Jeffrey Epstein case. And so there was a ton of conjecture on Twitter on Monday as this story was being reported about the fact that this woman had a connection to the Epstein case. And was this attack related to that connection? And of course, as the story was reported, it had nothing to do with that. But we're actually writing about the fact that there were a number of entities that went with this Epstein thing for a while with really no basis to support the reporting. So the importance of what you're suggesting, that we continue to rely on facts and that we have professionals in this country who are trained and who work to execute credible news reporting, is still important to us. It's very important. It's the fundamental of what we do every day.
There's also lots of criticism today of organizations like Facebook in terms of censorship.
Sure.
So how does fact-checking and where does fact-checking stop and censorship begin when you're looking at the basis of any story?
Yeah, so I deal with this, with opinion submissions, right? Because one of the things that I'm charged with doing is bringing more voices to the table. And so as a result of that, I mean, I field op-eds every day from, obviously in the pandemic, we're managing an awful lot of submitted content that has to do with health initiatives that various organizations are undertaking because of the pandemic, or social causes that are impacted by things that are happening with the pandemic. And so I've got to, in my charge, I've got to, I've got to fact check everything that comes across my desk, of course, but I also need to be cognizant of our tradition of honoring the First Amendment and allowing folks to have their perspective. I hate the word censorship because it's just so far from why I'm in the industry. We're here to offer perspectives.
But it's an easy label.
Yeah, it's an easy label
to throw to someone in your business to say,
right,
they're not letting my opinion or the truth as I see it. They're not letting me express myself, or they're cutting me off. And this is on the news every single day now, particularly as we approach a national election.
Yeah, and it always, and the heat always gets hotter on that as we approach national elections. We have been very upfront with folks for years about the fact that we reserve the right to publish or not to publish a submission. And so, and once we publish, then we've made a decision to let you have your First Amendment right. But we're not going to do that in every case. And my job is to assess whether or not submissions are factual. And if there are things that I disagree with, we try to have a dialogue with the folks who've written them and or about the facts, and we try to make them correct. But sometimes sometimes those conversations are not successful, and you just have to move forward.
One of the things that interests me is with the explosion of streaming everything. There's, I don't know how many different streaming resources now. And I guess what a lot of the providers of those services are banking on is the fact that we're all sitting around.
Yeah.
We've got all this time on our hands, and we might as well catch up on 14 different series. Maybe that's true or not. I don't know, but what I do know is that there is this enormous competition for content. So, I guess my logic would say, well, that would mean we would almost invite outrageous stuff just to have something that attracts attention. Does that ever cross the minds of the people in your office?
Yeah, it crosses our minds every day. I mean, we really try to be measured, especially on social channels, and especially as stories are developing and breaking, as was the case with the Salas case that I mentioned before. We take that very seriously. And unfortunately, we see more and more colleagues falling into the trap, as we saw on Monday with that case, where people were using conjecture to evaluate what was actually really happening.
So here's an opinion being voiced on text to us today. One is that the woman had ties to the Jeffrey Epstein case, which
that's true. And as I said, Judge Salas was assigned a case in federal court about 10 or 15 days ago related to a suit being brought against Deutsche Bank for its apparent complicity in some of the Maxwell case.
And then another texter says that my guest fact checks opinion pages and approves all of them as long as they are liberal views and lies.
Yeah, and I deal with this notion every day that the opinion pages in American newspapers are hewed to the left. I'm proud to say that I am a Wall Street Journal subscriber and am very interested in the kinds of opinion work that they do, which is seen by just about everyone as some of the most conservative opinion work in the country. I don't necessarily agree with all of it, and I certainly don't agree with everything that comes to my pages from the left. We are really working hard to bring a diversity of opinion to the opinion pages of our newspapers across New York and the Northeast. Obviously, you know, Democratic strongholds as we head into this election. But we know in this community in particular that there are many folks who still are, very committed to being conservative, and their voices deserve to be heard as well.
This next comment is from the same individual, and this is something you and I have discussed in the past, and it is as follows. Does your guest approve of people getting fired because they did not have the same view as liberal Marxist views? Okay, that's a perspective, like the New York Times case. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm not sure whether the listener is referring to the Cotton op-ed or to the more recent details with the Barry Weiss departure from the Times. I am not at all interested in having lockstep views on one side of the aisle or the other. And I think that, you know, in these recent cases where we've seen op-eds create these stirs, like the Cotton piece, like the Peter Navarro piece that my colleagues at USA Today published about 10 days ago related to Dr. Fauci, this is why the vetting system that I've talked about, the fact-checking, the rigor of being sure that we are comfortable with publishing is so important. And so if I'm the primary person who makes decisions in a number of our newspapers about what is published and what is not, but I also have a very elaborate system of back checks that involve other reads from other colleagues to prevent those kinds of things from happening. And any news organization worth its salt should do the same.
We have a caller on the line. This is Gustav from Williamsville. Gustav, how can we help you?
Good morning. I was wondering about your guest's opinion about the recent staff revolts against the editorial pages of the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. Maybe you've touched on that already, but thank you.
Well, thanks for the question, Gustav. We haven't really touched on it. So at the national news organizations, the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times, there have been significant pushbacks from journalists who report for the news reports of those organizations about what's happening on the opinion pages. I think, frankly, that some of that stuff is healthy, that internal discussion about what we want opinion journalism to mean is valuable. One of the exercises that we're planning to undertake going into 2021 is a newsroom-wide exercise about what we all want the opinion pages to champion. At our newspapers in northern New Jersey, for instance, we've always championed and been public about this, our commitment to free enterprise, our commitment to a safer and cleaner environment for northern New Jersey, and a commitment to opportunity for everyone who's in the community to do well for themselves.
You know, one of the things in the next segment I want to bring this back to is what this means for a person or a business that might want to promote what they're doing and how they maneuver through what has become kind of a, as I believe anyway, kind of a tribal environment in the news world. But before we get to that, how do you feel about the aggregators of news articles that other people write, and then they just post in these sites like the Empire Report, whose editor and owner was on the show, and I think it's called Medium. They're kind of a interesting collection of things, and oftentimes they put something up and then yank it off. I mean, what's with those?
Yeah, this is a complicated question, and we've talked about this before. One of the things that has made us nuts until we really made this hard pivot toward reader revenue was that other people would take our content and then, you know, essentially forage for it. But one of the great things about aggregators, in particular Empire Report, is that those folks are very interested in helping us drive reader revenue. And so they'll often pick up increasingly what we, you know, almost a quarter of what we publish now across the region is subscriber only. So you've got to pay for digital or have a print subscription that you've otherwise activated to include our digital platforms to read. And the smart aggregators are realizing that our very best content, our very best stories and columns and videos are subscriber only. And so they're often promoting those in an effort to drive people to click and pay.
So it helps you.
Yeah, and I think in the Empire Report model in particular, they are loud champions of journalism entities across the state, whether mm-hmm. they're private radio outlets, public radio outlets, the newspapers, or the TV stations. Aggregators like Empire Report really believe that, you know, having a diversity of and frankly having, you know, a number of people in the press in New York State covering the issues is important. So that's sort of my mission of what that entity has been, you know, my view of the mission of that entity.
You used a bunch of different terms earlier in the show about how the newspaper business, if you want to put it in a broad category, has changed: video, audio, social media, interactive. And I want to come back and have you talk about those things, because I think that really is the opportunity in all this, not just for you, but for people trying to sell a product or service. And we are right back with more from Our House to Yours after these very important messages.
Real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome to the West End, Buffalo's premier luxury waterfront development in the heart of downtown. Starting at $850,000, each townhome-style unit features three bedrooms, three and a half bathrooms, high-end finishes, hardwood floors, soaring ceilings, two-car attached garage, and much more. With only 20 units being built, now is the time to make your appointment to view this landmark development from Simonelli Real Estate. For more information, visit westinbuffalo.com or call the exclusive listing agent, Deacon Tasker, with Hunt Real Estate at 280-7787.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously updated huntrealestate.com, where everything is easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. Huntrealestate.com is the only place in the world where you can find a complete inventory of homes, and it's a constantly moving target, so you want to be on top of it, not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate and even through our links out to Arizona and also Boston, Massachusetts. You'll also find access to a complete set of homeownership services at huntrealestate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information on our exclusive program that allows you to roll the cost of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before and live the after, call 633-3700 and ask for details. It's a very important program. It's a difficult one in today's market because you don't often have the time between your look at the property and actually the contract and then the mortgage approval process to do the things that are required in this particular type of loan product. But because of the nature of our housing inventory in Western New York and really all through the markets we serve, there's a lot of older homes that are very beautiful homes, but you don't know what's behind the walls. And this is an opportunity for you to find out if you're so lucky as to have the luxury of time, which is not as often as we used to have it. And along those lines, many of you might have responded to an ad from the many, many, many mortgage companies out there about some product or this or that or the speed of this or that aspect of their process. No matter what you do, you want to make sure you're getting the best deal, the lowest rate and closing costs. There's only one way to do that, and that's through our Second Look program, 633-3700. Ask one of our mortgage consultants to take a look at whatever it is you have. What have you ever received from any other lender? And we'll make sure you're getting the best deal possible. And if we can't beat it, we're going to give you a gift certificate. So call 633-3700. That's a Second Look program, one of the great programs ever invented. And remember, if you do have a home and you want to go into the market and you wonder, well, gee, I have to sell my home before I buy a house, take the worry away. Ask one of our sales professionals about the seller security plan. We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. Simple as that. Call today, 633-9400. Thank you for joining me today. In the studio with me today is Edward Forbes, Jr., the Senior Director for News and Engagement for USA Today Network Atlantic. We've been talking about the evolving nature of news reporting in and of itself and various ways that you get information, the many, many ways that you get information today, where it used to be one of three television channels and two different newspapers. And now there's nine.
Yeah, the days of the Courier in the morning and the News at night and the networks are, they seem like a lifetime ago, and they were in a lot of ways.
Well, almost in years they were.
Yeah.
So we have a caller on the line, Ed, before we get back to a bunch of my questions. This is Mark from Buffalo. Mark, how can we help you?
Good morning, Peter. It's Mark in Buffalo.
Yes, sir.
I have two questions for your guest. I'd like to know what his thoughts are on the Nicholas Sandman defamation lawsuit, the Covington Catholic High School student that was defamed. And there was a reported settlement yesterday with CNN for approximately $250 million, and there was also previously a settlement with the Washington Post, and his lawyer has 13 other lawsuits at mainstream media organizations for defaming him in his interaction with the Native Indian. It was turned around, and I'm sure your guest is familiar with that. The other question would be his thoughts on the ouster of the New York Times editorial person for printing the Tom Cotton editorial op-ed and the resignation of another editorial New York Times editor, a woman, I don't know her name, who resigned over bias and bullying at the New York Times because of her...
Well, we did have a question about that earlier, but go to the first question about the Nicholas Sandman suit.
Yeah, this is a complicated case in which the family of a teenager who was at the center of one of these viral video controversies filed against the Washington Post and other outlets. You know, I'm not at all surprised that there was a settlement here. I think that, you know, these are very complicated cases that, you know, get parsed through the courts as they should. I think that, you know, they're kind of... I'm not going to take a position on whether or not I think the settlement was correct or not, but I would say that the settlement is as an interesting piece of context as we try to cover an increasingly complicated world, as Peter suggested, a world in which there is more media that is being created by more people than any other time in history. And so being careful and figuring out how we deal with those pieces of media is a puzzle that those of us in the industry are faced with trying to solve every day, and we're a long way from solving it conclusively. As to the departure of Mr. Bennett at the Times and some of the other things that have happened at other outlets, including Ms. Weiss's departure from there, I happen to believe that more diversity of thought is a better thing in every instance in our industry. And I think that the Times is very lucky, and it's a resource-rich organization. It's not a publicly traded operation for the most part. It's controlled by it has been controlled by the same family for much of its history, and they've done a terrific job leading our industry in trying to solve the reader revenue puzzle. But I do think that we should all be circumspect in trying to limit perspectives from having air in this environment. There's a very important letter that was written and signed by dozens and dozens of American intellectuals and public figures of all manner of opinions, and this letter was published in Harper's earlier this month, basically rejecting the cancel culture while at the same time acknowledging that some of the issues of racial and social equity that are being played out in the country's civil discourse do need to be solved. But as we do that, I think we need to be very careful about being sure that we say that we are welcoming of all perspectives. So I hope that answers that question.
I think it was diplomatic the way you said before we get, I want to have some more of your thoughts on this whole cancel culture issue and what it means for freedom of expression, which I think is very, very touchy right now. One of the things that we face every day is how, and many businesses do, how to market our products and services. And we have to look at various ways to get that message out to the public. It used to be easy, like we were describing. There, you had some radio stations to choose from, you had a few television stations to choose from, and you had a couple newspapers to choose from. Now there's, you know, bazillion outlets, and each one has a different means by which they can hit that particular audience you're trying to seek, which sometimes we can't even define. And so they help to try to define it for us. And I think the whole nature of marketing and advertising is going through an upheaval, and I'm not sure anybody has a real good handle on it.
I would agree. And we've talked about this before. And my perspective is that everybody now is in the content business. So if you are a hospital system and you've got a cancer center, you're in the business of marketing that cancer center. And so you can easily buy sponsored positions in newspapers or on radio or television air to promote your cancer center through the expertise of those folks who work there. You know, this program is a sort of legacy example of sponsored content in that, you know, the Hunt Real Estate Company is invested in trying to help Western New Yorkers understand the real estate market. There are tons and tons and tons of ways that one can market one's products in this way. And we've been saying in the news industry for more than 10 years now that we feel that everyone is in the content industry, and that one of the ways we've tried to harness that is to really lean in and embrace the idea of sponsored content, which is the kind of thing that I described coming from the hospitals. And we've developed some remarkable partnerships with health systems across the Northeast as a result. And those partnerships are good for those hospitals, which of course are trying to reach baby boomer audiences, which we have in droves. And they're good partnerships for us because they drive revenue.
And we're going to be interviewing a couple of the leaders of the local health systems in the upcoming weeks, because they are so important in the transition taking place in that industry. Just in terms of how they market their services, is makes your head spin in many respects, as you point out.
Yeah, and I just as a health consumer, that landscape is so rich with offerings that it is it's overwhelming at times.
You know, you mentioned video, audio, social media, interactive. I mean, a lot of people think they might understand all those things, and I'm not necessarily one of them. But one of the things that has really impacted our industry is video. Just this week, we listed a home, a very magnificent home here in Buffalo, and the listing agent sent me the video on it last night. It's a property in the Elmwood Village area. It's spectacular property on Lincoln Parkway, and this is magnificent work. It's just magnificent work. And if I were a customer for a home like that, it would be, I mean, it's so rich in the content that it delivers. It's so much different than the grainy little picture that we used to run in the newspaper way back when.
Right, of just the front of the house. You never even got to see a picture of the kitchen or what kind of appliances.
Oh, no.
Forget it.
No,
yeah,
no. You had to call the agent.
Right.
Had to call the agent, and they tried to describe it to you over the phone. Better yet, they tried to get you into the house, and oftentimes there was massive disappointment. There's no disappointment in this particular property, I can assure you.
Yeah.
So, I mean, how does an organization like yours, so steeped in the very traditional ways, how do you then muster all these different vehicles to really enhance the delivery of news, so to speak, to the consumer?
So this may sound simple, but in reality, it really is. We sit down every morning and talk about the storylines that we're pursuing. In the old days, this would have been, you know, the meeting where the editor sat around with crusty cups of coffee and said, "I'm going to put this story on the cover of the local section tomorrow. I'm going to put this one on the front page." Instead, we talk about what we're reporting and which reporter is doing it, and then we sort of run through a basic checklist. Okay, what are we doing for photography? Do we make do we have the photography that we need to convey this story? Our digital products demand photography on every piece of content we publish, so it's essential that we have visuals. Then we go to video, because video is such a huge part of the digital customer's experience, and it's a big revenue driver for us. It's incredibly important. So, do we have the right video that we need on this piece of journalism? Then we start talking about, well, how are we going to market this piece on social media? Are there Facebook pages that are in that are focused on geographic areas that we need to specifically target? So, for instance, if we were doing a story about the sale of this home in Elmwood Village, is there an Elmwood Village Facebook page that we want to make sure we post this story to?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we start talking about, well, does this story require a more sophisticated digital presentation than what we can offer? The quarterback on a project about a serial killer at the beginning of the year in northern New Jersey, and we worked for about 6 weeks with digital producers within the USA Today network to build a really rich and unusual digital presentation that brought together all these elements in one really beautiful package. So it's not something we talk about in the abstract anymore. It's really a daily disciplined exercise of saying, how do we check all these different boxes that we know we need to do? And so, when I started my career 20 years ago, we were a hell of a lot closer to the crusty editors with crusty cups of coffee talking about what was on the front page. But today, when we sit down to start the day, it's all about what we're going to do to drive reader revenue and make sure we have all those assets.
And we'll be right back with more from our host years after these important messages.
Hunt has been serving your real estate services needs since 1911. In all that time, Hunt has never lost their commitment to this community, and nothing, including our current challenges, will change that commitment. Hunt will face the challenges as they always have with you, together. Through the power of state-of-the-art technology, they're able to remain open for business at Hunt Mortgage. Call 633-3700 and any of Hunt's mortgage professionals can assist you. Hunt Mortgage is a licensed mortgage banker, New York Department of Financial Services, and an equal opportunity lender.
Welcome to the West End, Buffalo's premier luxury waterfront development in the heart of downtown. Starting at $850,000, each townhome-style unit features 3 bedrooms, 3.5 bathrooms, high-end finishes, hardwood floors, soaring ceilings, 2-car attached garage, and much more. With only 20 units being built, now is the time to make your appointment to view this landmark development from Simonelli Real Estate. For more information, visit westinbuffalo.com or call the exclusive listing agent, Deacon Tasker, with Hunt Real Estate at 280-7787.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the continuously updated and improved huntrealestate.com, where everything is easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. And the show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the pre-purchase commitment and the second look program. Call them, find out today. These are the best deals in town, anywhere in the markets we serve, only through Hunt Mortgage, 633-3700. I'm in the studio today with the Senior Director for News and Engagement for USA Today Network Atlantic, that's Edward Forbes Jr., and we've been talking about really the transformation that's taken place in media and how an organization like USA Today and its parent company, Gannett, how they've adapted and how quickly they've adapted. Before we go any farther, Ed, though, we have a couple callers I've been waiting for a while. This is Joe from North Tonawanda. Joe, how can we help you?
Oh, hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Hey, Joe.
Well, for some reason, I picked up a copy of the Buffalo News waiting for my breakfast at a restaurant, and there was a couple articles about the president, one written by a Buffalo News reporter, and the other one was a syndicated New York Times article.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could just feel the venom coming out of the article. I mean, it was just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
An intelligent person supposed to trust the news when so many of these outlets are writing articles like that. These are mainstream outlets that are just, I get they don't like the guy, but the way they write these articles is just insulting. I mean, how can you trust,
Is that your question? How do we trust the media in light of something like that? I think that's a great question. How would you respond to that?
I mean, that guy could give a poor person $1 million and the New York Times would criticize them.
Well, that may be true. How would you react to that?
I feel that any coverage of the president, frankly, is twinged with this on either side of the aisle because he is such a political lightning rod. One of the things we've done is really tamped down and tried to really emphasize local. And I know that the Buffalo News is proud of its tradition of carrying syndicated stuff from the Times and of covering what's happening in Washington with a Western New York lens, and the institution should be. But I think that editors everywhere would be well served to hear this kind of concern because the passion around particularly what's happening in the White House in this term is very real, and I think folks who feel aligned with the president or sympathetic toward the president don't see enough of their perspective in our news pages, and that's something that I try to be very conscious of as we do our work.
We have another caller from Rochester. This is John. John, how can we help you?
Hey, Peter.
Hi, John.
I had, I've got a question regarding media bias, and there was a study done by Harvard about a year and a half ago, I think it was, on a negative coverage of Trump. Was 92% negative coverage, and Obama at the same time had 46% negative coverage. I would imagine negative coverage on Trump is much higher today than that. And I'll let you comment on that. But the thing that I've seen, and I agree with the last caller, I've had hundreds and hundreds of emails back and forth between reporters for USA Today, New York Times, et cetera, about the tremendous amount of bias, not only against Trump, but against conservatives and for the left. Black Lives Matter, as an example, they operate in a false narrative. There's nothing said about that in the coverage. It's glorified, and it's the leftist coverage is just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. USA Today, but Times, and even the Buffalo News, Democratic Chronicle locally here in Rochester, the local reporters are very biased. Buffalo News reporters locally are better, but the New York Times, USA Today, Washington Post, just terrible.
Well, there's a direct criticism, Ed. How do you feel about that?
Again, I think that, as I've said to several callers this morning, we need to be cognizant of everyone's perspectives. I also think, we have been transparent about our commitment to racial and social equity as a company and as a news organization, and I am not going to shy away from that. And I think, I'll just say that, point blank. But all that said, again, I do think that we as editors are tasked with being very conscious about how folks interpret what we do, and I think these criticisms are in that regard are worth listening to.
I do too. I just, it's like a university. You and I were talking about this before. When the numbers work so much in favor of one point of view and opposed to another, how do you bring? I mean, I hate to use the word fairness into that environment without blowing it up.
Yeah, I think that again, this goes back to the Harper's letter that I mentioned and the national discussion on the cancel culture. Yeah, my guiding light on this, and I think it should be for everyone who's in this work, is the First Amendment, which is just protects everyone's right to perspective. And I think that you and I have talked about this many times before, but in the context of those kinds of communities where certain kinds of ideological expectations are a cultural norm, it's also okay that dissent is okay.
I hope that's true.
Right. Well, it certainly should be. And as I said, my guidance is always the First Amendment. And that's why I keep repeating this. But, I mean, we are committed to a diversity of opinion and perspective in the work that we do. And that's the only way forward as far as I'm concerned.
You've used the term cancel culture a few times in the show today. And some of our listeners may understand that, others may not.
And I don't really like the term, but basically, as you've described it, it's a simplified way of looking at the reaction to nonconformity in terms of ideology in the country. And again, I think everyone is entitled to their own opinions and their own views, and that those views are and their right to express those views is constitutionally protected.
The cancel culture is exactly what?
This is the reaction we've seen to some extent. This is what readers are asking about when they're talking about what's gone on at the Times in the wake of the Tom Cotton op-ed, which was one perspective on how the federal government could respond to some of the demonstrations we've seen in our cities over the last 8 weeks. The editorial page editor at the Times ended up leaving in the wake of the publication of that.
Is that what they mean by cancel?
Yeah, yeah.
Just
and
cancel
he pushed out. Yeah, that's it. He's done. We turn off the lights on him for a while. So, I just think that everybody in this especially in charge environment could do well to take a deep breath and be polite and allow other folks to have their perspectives.
I think that's a great word, and I think it's something that's lost in this whole process. That's just being civil and courteous and off and presenting yourself with good manners and respect. I think anybody will listen to just about anything if it's couched in those terms.
I have a colleague who it does exactly what I do in the Southeast. He's based in Tennessee, and he's undertaken a project called Civility Tennessee, which has tried to reset the public discourse in that state by just doing exactly what I just said, by saying stop, deep breath, you know, comport yourself in a respectful manner as you engage with your fellow citizen. And what a difference and successful program they've had with that, and certainly something I think we could benefit from here in the Northeast, especially, you know, in a state like New York, which has a massive diversity of perspective and opinion given the scope of our geography and the different economies that exist within that geography.
I know you had similar opportunities when you were growing up, but I had the opportunity to actually, not from my parents certainly, but also through a more formal process, to learn things like etiquette. I mean, it's like a word that's been lost, manners, who should go through a door first, you know, and these are things that are, should be automatic in society. And what, just by showing that level of respect, as opposed to getting in somebody's face and screaming at them and or just talking over them so that they can't even get their point of view across, is it, the latter is the way that people seem to be behaving today, rather than with some degree of just common courtesy. It seems to be lost in this whole discussion.
Yeah, and it goes back to what you were talking about in terms of he who speaks loudest is heard furthest, you know, in terms of doing something just to get a reaction. And I think, you know, candidly, I think we have too much of that in the political culture in the country now. And I think, you know, in terms of our public discourse on really important things like the questions and discussions we're having on racial and social equity, we're not showing our best selves, unfortunately. But again, I think if we're guided by what the First Amendment protects and by a sense of decency, we can really elevate the whole discussion.
And the sense of decency thing is something that I think is very important because I find that, and that's true in business, it's true everywhere across the board, that this is a far better world if people just establish a sense of decency in their communication and in their contact with other people. I just think it's a much better way to go about it. And I think any point of view can be expressed.
Absolutely. And I have so many writers, so many folks who write me letters to the editor or send in op-eds who are even in asking us to publish them are already amped up and convinced we're not going to publish them because we don't like their perspectives. And every time I get to surprise someone by writing back and saying, well, thank you for your submission, we'll be glad to consider it, please look for it in this Thursday's edition of whatever or online on this day or that day, they are so pleasantly surprised. And it's kind of an amusement for me, but it is a sign that it's something that we should all do better with.
Seems like anger is rewarded these days.
Well, anything spectacular is rewarded these days, whether it's anger or, you know, exaggeration or absurdity.
But it seems
absurdity.
Like, it seems like anger's taken first for the pole position in all this.
Yeah, I hear you,
you
there.
Because it's just unnecessary, because all it does is inflame the person on the other end of that. Who wants to say, oh, you're right, just get angry with me, just please go ahead.
Right.
I mean, who wants to? Nobody's going to do that.
I know.
So anyway, we've got about a minute left here, Ed. If our listeners want to follow up with you, how would they do that?
They can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Ed Forbes. They can send me an email. I'm at eForbes, E-F-O-R-B-E-S, at Gannett.com. Those are the best ways to reach me.
And I'll be very interested to see if and how you receive some feedback, because we clearly have touched a bit of a nerve with people out there listening. And the interesting thing about radio is how that whole thing has changed, the whole medium, in terms of just the number of people, because of so many distractions that we have in our life. What do you think the future? What's going to will there be a shakeout? Will there be a, it has to because not you can't you don't have the time in a day to focus on all these things.
Yeah, and this is one of the reasons we're continuing to push people on digital subscriptions. We can deliver our best to you in an email first thing in the morning, or a push alert that, you know, has an aggregated post of our best news. I think that's, you know, news literacy will continue to be important no matter what the environment looks like. And I think news outlets, no matter how they're owned or operated, will continue to play a role. But I do think it's important for folks to take the time and think about what they're reading and read thoughtfully. And even in these complicated days that we all face in our careers, you know, if it's a quick thing in the morning, it's all a matter of habit and routine.
Ed Forbes, Jr., the Senior Director for News and Engagement for USA Today Network Atlantic. Thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
I'd like to thank our listeners for being with us. We'll be back again next week at the same time. And remember, when it comes to real estate, all of upstate is hunt country.